Good morning. How is everybody this fine day? And before I forget again, I forgot the last two recordings, I've got to invite the Lord into our Bible study. I got to do that. Dear Heavenly Father, and Lord, I so apologize, and please forgive me for forgetting to pray the last two times, and that you, I always want to keep in mind that that you are welcome into our Bible study, and that you come in and help us to understand your word, and you can be here and help us to be ever faithful to your word. In Jesus' precious name I pray. Amen. I actually feel guilty. I almost re-recorded yesterday's only because it bothered me after I got done that I forgot to pray. So I got, hopefully the Lord forgave me, and he's there with me trying to help me understand this. Today, we're going to do the parable of Aloha and Alaba. And that can be, by the way, that can be spelled either an O or an A. I've seen it both ways in different versions of the King James Bibles. And it's Ezekiel 23, and I'm going to break this particular chapter down in probably either three or four lessons. It's a little bit long one. And just to kind of go back to our outline a little bit, just so we remember where we're at, let's take a look at our outline again. And right now we haven't quite got to Ezekiel 24 yet. So that's that'll be sometime next week. We'll finish up 23 this week, and maybe even 24 is kind of short. That may get finished this week, maybe not. And then we get to move into a new stage. That's Ezekiel 25 through 32. And it's kind of interesting because we're going to actually be looking at the nations around Jerusalem and God's judgment on those. And then we're going to start getting into the more prophetic prophecy part of the Ezekiel book, when we get stuck in the chapters 33. 33 is actually where the actual destruction of Jerusalem actually happens. So we'll see that. And then we'll move into prophecy, starting more in Ezekiel 33 through 37 is the prophecy of Daniel's 70th week time frame. And then also the moving into the Millennium Kingdom in chapters 38 through 40. I'm sorry, 38 through 40 will be the prophecy of the Gog and Magog war, but that's still prophetic. That hasn't happened yet. And in Ezekiel 40 through 48 will be the prophecy of the Millennium Kingdom. And so those are the periods of time that Ezekiel covers. So back to, and just to give a little overreach of this particular, we're talking about the North and South Kingdom, and I don't know if I've ever shown a map, but if you look at this map, the blue area is called the Kingdom of Israel. Now I know the whole country is called Israel, but in this particular time frame, this is about, if you look at this, this is about 700 BC. It would be when after Solomon, who had the entire kingdom as one, after he broke up, it broke up into two kingdoms. This northern kingdom became more of an idol worshiping. They kind of resorted back to idol worship and didn't want anything to do with the temple. So they kind of separated from the southern kingdom. And so the northern kingdom became known as the Kingdom of Israel or Samaria. And then the southern kingdom, that gold part you see there, the Kingdom of Judea, which included Jerusalem and the temple. And so this parable we're going to say today is a little bit about that. And just so we have this map up over here already, when we get into chapters 25 through 32, here's all of the surrounding area of this particular time frame, around 600 BC, of all the different countries that are around modern Israel And some of them today, I can even almost visualize are represented here. You see this where it says Palestine city-states. That's the Gaza Strip, more or less. And you know that the PLO is kind of a heavy influence there. Kind of interesting how things haven't changed a whole lot in 2,500 years. And over here we see King of Moab and the Kingdom of Ammon. That general area there is actually the is where Jordan is, a little bit more than that. See Damascus up here, that's still there ever since then. And we're going to talk a little bit about Assyria today. And you can see where the Assyrian Empire was back then. And they actually, during this period of time, during their takeover of the Northern Kingdom, they also took over the Syria itself. So that's kind of how Syria got its name. You know, it's Assyrian and Syria, kind of a similar. You just drop the AS. And so this area that's known here as Kingdom of Aram and Damascus is modern day Syria, including parts of. And so that is a general outline of the area of this time frame. So now to get into the word. So I'm only going to take 11 verses today, and talk a little bit about these two sisters. Another parable, Ezekiel 23, and it's kind of interesting that Ezekiel here, through God is the one that actually gave him in this parable. But it's kind of fascinating how God continues to use all through history this symbology of a husband and wife relationship. And in this case, he's calling his idolatrous wife the daughters of a woman with two daughters, is the way he's putting it. So the word of the Lord came unto me saying, Son of man, there were two women, the daughters of one mother. So these women we're going to talk about. And they're going to be symbolically, they're going to be represented by the Northern Kingdom and the Southern Kingdom. And mostly tonight, we're going to talk about today, this morning, we're going to talk about the Northern Kingdom, just a little review about what was going on in that time frame. Now, I know we're talking mostly about the Babylonian, but this happened about seven. The Assyrians took over this empire, this northern portion, about 710 BC. Actually, 721 BC is when Israel was captured by the Assyrians. So that'll give you time. So it was about 150 years before what we're talking now. So it was already had happened. But here in Ezekiel 23, Ezekiel is giving a brief history of how the Northern Kingdom had fallen into adultery, and God had allowed Assyria to take them over and to punish them, and how the fact that even though they saw what happened to the Northern Kingdom, now the Southern Kingdom or Judea is going to do a similar thing, and so that's what is being represented by this parable. So over in Jeremiah 3:7, talking about not heeding the warnings, Jeremiah was prophesying about this thing. And I'll just read a couple of verses here. And I said, after she had done all these things, turn now unto me, but she returned not, and her treacherous sister Judea saw it. So this is God telling Jeremiah to tell to remind the people of what happened to Assyria. And that the reasoning behind it, that they were taken over. And I saw when for all the causes whereby backsliding Israel committed adultery, I had her put away and given her a bill of divorce, yet her treacherous sister Judea feared not, but went and played the harlot also. And it came to pass through the lightness of her whoredom that she defiled the land and committed adultery with stones and with stocks. And yet, for all this, her treacherous sister Judea had not turned unto me with her whole heart, but feignly, says the Lord. Back to Ezekiel 23:3. And they committed whoredoms in Egypt. They committed whoredoms in their youth. They were their breast pressed, and there were bruised their teats of their virginity. Kind of interesting how God always uses the symbology of the harlot to when the nations don't do as he expected them to do, that they were basically idolatrous, and he uses the terms of being a harlot, and that's why he divorced them and punished them. And over in Joshua 24:14, Joshua speaks about this a little bit. Now, therefore, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the flood and in Egypt, and serve ye the Lord. Now, come to realize that what happened here is that the northern kingdom, during this breakup between when the northern kingdom separated from Judea, they didn't want to serve in the temple. They wanted to do things their own way. And they basically returned to the Egyptian gods. And if you remember when they came out of captivity in Egypt, then one of the first things that happens is when they got to the Mount Sinai, as they set up this golden calf and started worshiping it. While Moses is up on the hill getting the Ten Commandments from God. And it's kind of the same thing that happened in the Northern Kingdom, as that the king at that time frame was Jeroboam. And he actually set up two places of worship in the Northern Kingdom using calves, these golden calves. So you're going to see a little bit here of where God talks a little bit about that particular. That's why he said here that you serve the gods of your fathers. So you're doing something that's similar to what your fathers did. We're going all the way back to, when did the Exodus happen? It was 1491 was the Exodus. And so we're talking at this time frame, that was 900 years ago. So here God is reminding them that they're going right back into what they punished. He punished the fathers of Israel before. Also in James 4:4. Ye adulterers and adulteresses, know ye not that the friendship of the world is enmity with God? Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is an enemy of God. Hosea mentions over in 2:15, and I will give her her vineyards from thence, and the valley of Achor for a door of hope, and she shall sing there as in the days of her youth, and as in the days when she came up out of the land of Egypt. Again, reminding the Northern Kingdom of all the things that they did to talking about the Egyptian worship is what he's talking about when he said in Ezekiel 23:3, and they committed whoredoms in Egypt. So that's the whoredoms we're talking about here, and it was done during their youth. So God gave them a little bit of a pass because they were young and that they were youthful. But here we are 700 years later, and they're getting back into it again. So they should have learned their lesson, is the way I kind of read that. So verse 4 of chapter 23. The names of them were, I'm going to get into the names of, God is giving this parable to Ezekiel, and he's using these two names. It's interesting what the names mean. And the names of them were Ahiloah, the elder, and Helobah, her sister, and they were mine, and they bare sons and daughters. And thus were their names. Samaria as Abola, that'd be the northern kingdom, and Jerusalem as Abolabah, and that would be the southern kingdom. And just kind of curious what those names mean. Abola, which is Jerusalem in Judea, means my tent is in her. So the tent in this scenario means the tabernacle. I did that same thing last night, didn't I? Where I had my double picture up there. Let me shut off the double picture. I just realized it was there again. Sorry about that yesterday. I realized after I saw the recording that I left I can turn cameras on and off, and depending on what page I'm on, I can put my the camera in the corner like that. But some of the frames, I have it automatically there. So that's why you saw the double picture yesterday. Where was I? So I was talking about the, so it means my tent is in her, and that means that Jerusalem is where the temple is, and that's where God's house is. And so we see that over in 1 Kings 8:29, reference to that. That thy eyes may be open toward the house night and day, even toward the place which thou hast said, my name shall be there, and that thou mayest hearken unto the prayer which the servant shall make toward this place. Also in Psalm 76, 2. In Salem, and believe it or not, Jerusalem has Salem in it. Have you ever seen that when they talk about the king there, that there's both a king and a priest that's talking about that Jesus is said to be just like him, which is the I'll think of his name in a minute. Now I can't think of his name. At the order of Melchizedek. Melchizedek was a king way before Israel was even mentioned. And it's after the order of Melchizedek that Jesus was in line of. And he was the king of Salem. So that this is the verse that helps us identify what Salem is. And it says here, in Salem also is his tabernacle and his dwelling place in Zion. So this is indicating that God's tabernacle or his house is in Salem and that it's in Zion. We know Zion to be the area of Jerusalem. So I thought I'd point that out too. So, and then Heloah means her own tent. So basically, that means that she set up her own tent. So she set up idol worship, these two places that had she set up idols in. We see this talked about in 1 Kings 12. And I guess some quite a few verses here to read in 1 Kings 12 to explain about this whole idea of the Northern Kingdom. Thought it was a great passage for that. And it came to pass when all Israel heard that Jeroboam was come again, that they sent and called him unto the congregation, and made him king over all Israel. There was none that followed the house of David. Now, pay attention to this verse here. There was none that followed the house of David, but the tribe of Judah only. So that ends up being the southern kingdom. And we jump down to verse 26. And Jeroboam said in his heart, now shall the kingdom return to the house of David. If this people go up to do sacrifice in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then shall their heart of these people turn again unto the Lord, even unto Rehoboam, king of Judea. So, in other words, in this case, Jeroboam was jealous that the Jerusalem had the temple, and he didn't want the people going down there to worship. So that's why he set up his own temples in the northern kingdom. That's what's talking about here. Then shall the heart of those people return again unto their Lord, even unto Rehoboam, which was the king of Judea at that time. And they shall kill me and go again to Rehoboam, king of Judea. Whereupon the king took counsel and made two calves of gold and said unto them, it is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Behold thy gods. Notice a little g on this one, false god. O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. So here, again, Jeroboam is trying to convince the people, you don't need to go down to Jerusalem. I'll get you some temples right here, and you can worship the same gods that you worship coming out of Egypt, and everything's cool. So that was he's setting up false. This is what got upset. Verse 29 in 1 Kings 12, and he set the one in Bethel, and the other he put in Dan. And the thing became a sin, for the people went to worship before the one even unto Dan. And he made a house of high places and made, remember we talked about high places quite a few times in this study. That's usually a place of idol worship. and made priests of the lowest of the people, which were not of the sons of Levi, break another commandment, and all the priests had to come out of the tribe of Levi, but they're all down in Judea. Verse 32 in 1 Kings 12, and Jeroboam ordained a feast in the eighth month on the 15th day of the month, like unto the feast that is in Judea, and he offered upon the altar. So did he in Bethel, sacrificing unto the calves that he made, and he placed in Bethel the priests of the high places which he had made. So he offered, so basically he's making a carbon copy of the temple and trying to make it look like it's okay to worship there. It's an alternative place to the temple in Jerusalem. So he offered upon the altar which he made in Bethel the 15th day of the eighth month, even the month which he had devised of his own heart. So he made this all up and ordained a feast unto the children of Israel, and he offered upon the altar and burnt incense. So I'll give you a quick history there of what was going on in the northern kingdom. Back over to Ezekiel 23:5. So here's God speaking again through Ezekiel. And Haloah played the harlot when she was mine, and she dotted her on her lovers on the Assyrians, her neighbors. Remember I was showing you the map there of the Assyrians. The Assyrians decided to take over Syria area, which is right there next to the northern kingdom. So at first, they became friends. Basically, they were, they were good buddies. And so at that particular time period, Haloah, which would be the northern kingdom or Samaria, started becoming really friendly with the Assyrians, which were idol worshipers, and started taking on their gods. That's what it's basically talking about here. And over in Kings 14:9, talks about this. But has done evil above all that were before thee. For thou hast gone and made thee other gods and molten images to provoke me to anger, and hast cast me behind thy back. Jumping down to verse 16. And he shall give Israel up because of the sins of Jeroboam, who did sin and who made Israel to sin. And also over in verse 31. And it came to pass as if he had been a light thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that he took to wife Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of Zeodians, and went and worshiped Baal and worshiped him. So this is where Baal worship comes in. We talked about that quite a bit the other day when we were talking about the Baal worship and sacrificing children to Baal. And he reared up an altar for Baal in the house of Baal, which he built in Samaria. So you can see that basically these are a good review of the sins of the northern kingdom. Well, meanwhile, back in, I'll mention at the end here. So back over to Ezekiel 23:6, which were clothed with blue captains and rulers, all of them desirable young men, horsemen riding upon horses. Thus she committed her whoredom with them, with all of them that were the chosen men of Assyria, and with all of whom she dotted with her their idols, she defiled herself. So basically, they got really friendly with the Assyrians. So they started mimicking all the things that Assyria was doing to make to be friends. And you can almost see that same thing happening. You know, today's it's amazing to me as I read Ezekiel how much of this stuff is even happening today. You know, when you think about people that give in to worldly desires, forgetting about God. And we may not worship golden calves anymore, but we have worships, we have idols that we worship that maybe aren't so noticeable, like power and money and going after things that please us rather than pleasing God. So that's basically what Ezekiel is trying to convince these people, is that what the southern kingdom is doing now is exactly what the northern kingdom did. So continuing over in Hosea 5:3. I like the little book of Hosea. It's really a neat little book if you'll get a chance to read the whole thing. But really, in a nutshell, Hosea had had decided to marry a Gentile woman who was a someone who was ended up being a prostitute, well, actually committed adultery. But it was a very symbolic message to what was happening to the northern kingdom, where Hosea was faithful and true. He was a great prophet, But his wife was actually going off and doing all these worldly things that got her tied up with the wrong crowd, and she ended up going with another man. And that in the end of the story, the man tossed her away after he had done with her, and she ended up in the slave market. And the beauty of the story is that Hosea goes to the slave market and uses every bit of money he has to buy her back out of slavery. What a beautiful story of his dedication to his wife. So, nice little story if you ever get a chance to read it. And Hosea 6:10, I have seen a horrible thing in the house of Israel. There is whoredom of Ephraim. Israel is defiled. So again, still kind of talking about what the Northern Kingdom is doing, and that Ezekiel is saying here is that the Southern Kingdom had plenty of time to realize their mistakes and didn't. So back over to Ezekiel 23:8. Neither left she her whoredoms brought from Egypt, for in her youth they lay with her, and they bruised the breast of her virginity and poured the whoredom upon her. So again, just symbolically saying that that Israel was now performing, was becoming an adulterous wife of God, that she was not following his commandments anymore, had forgotten all about all the promises that God had given her, all the great things he'd done for her, brought him out of Egypt and set him up in the land of milk and honey, and things were really great there for a while. You think about King David and King Solomon, the kingdom was really doing well during that time frame. It just shows you that money and power, how it can corrupt. Oh, by the way, I meant to mention that talking about Hosea a little bit, he was actually a prophet to the Northern Kingdom. So that's why I've mentioned him a few times. And that he prophesied, he lived from 760 BC to 710 BC. So that was his period of time of prophecy, and mostly to the Northern Kingdom. He was working alongside Amos, and that the other prophets at that time frame for the Southern Kingdom of Judea was Isaiah and let's see, Isaiah and Nahum were the other prophets for the Southern Kingdom at that particular time frame. Back to Exodus, and just to mention what we've been talking about here, in Exodus 32:4 is what we've been talking about, what happened in Egypt that they're now repeating. And received them at their hand, and fashioned it with a graving tool after he had made it a molten calf. And they said, "These be thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt." So back to Ezekiel 23:9. Wherefore I have delivered her into the hand of her lovers, into the hand of the Assyrians upon whom she doted. So now we're talking about what happened, ended up happening to the Northern Kingdom, as that Assyria finally took them over. And that was partially God's doing. And we see that a little bit over in 2 Kings, starting in verse 15:29. In the days of Pekah, king of Israel, came Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, and took Ejon, and I'm going to torture these names, Abel-Labatha-Machia, and Janoah, and Kadesh, and Hazor, and Gilead, and Galilee. So it's describing the northern kingdom area. All the land of Naphtali, and carried them captive to Assyria. So that happened in 7, what did I say? 721 BC. Now jumping up to chapter 18 of 2 Kings, starting in verse 9, and it came to pass in the fourth year of King Hezekiah, which was the seventh year of Hosea, son of Eli, king of Israel, that Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, came up against Samaria and besieged it. So this is when it actually happened. I think it happened in two phases. Basically, they took the northern part where Galilee is, in that general area. And then Assyria kept pushing south. The actual capital of the northern kingdom was Samaria. So that's why you keep saying here in Samaria. And that's when the entire northern kingdom fell, is when they took over Samaria. So that's in 2 Kings 18, what I'm reading now. Hosea, king of Israel, Samaria was taken after a siege. And the king of Assyria did carry away Israel under Assyria and put them in Halah and Habor by the river of Gozan and in the cities of the Medes. Because they obeyed not the voice of the Lord their God, but transgressed his covenant and all of that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded, and would not hear them nor do them. And again, just like he's doing now with the southern kingdom. The northern kingdom, he sent prophets, he sent many people to try to convince them to change their ways. They didn't change either. So that's kind of what we're talking about here a little bit. Okay. Ezekiel 23:10. These discovered her nakedness. They took her sons and her daughters and slew her with a sword, and she became famous among women, for they had executed judgment upon her. I think the important message here is that basically that God is in control of all kingdoms. He raises kingdoms up and he takes them down. And we see over in Jeremiah 22, 8 and 9. And many nations shall pass by this city, and they shall say, even as it's Samaria they're talking about here, and shall say every man to his neighbor, wherefore hath the Lord done thus unto this great city? Then they shall answer, because they have forsaken the covenant of the Lord their God and worshiped other gods and served them. So Jeremiah is saying here, remember, he was prophesying to the southern kingdom. He was in Jerusalem. So he's using he's even reminding the people in the southern kingdom, look what happened to the northern kingdom. You guys better pay attention. And of course, they didn't. Okay, Ezekiel 23:11. And when her sister Ebola saw this, she was more corrupt in her inordinate love than she and her whoredoms more than her sister and her whoredoms. So this is basically saying that Jerusalem is looking at the northern kingdom and basically saying, aha, you got yours. Kind of like saying that, we're good down here, but you're not good up there. They took you. But what Ezekiel is going to say here, coming up in the next half of this chapter, is that nope, you're doing the same thing that Northern Kingdom did. So jumping over into Jeremiah 3, 8 through 11. And I saw when for all the causes whereby backsliding Israel committed adultery, I had her put away and given her a bill of divorce. Notice how he uses the same terminology you would in a marriage. So he's basically given Israel, the Northern Kingdom, divorce. Yet her treacherous sister Judea feared not, but went and played the harlot also. And it came to pass through the lightness of her whoredom that she defiled the land and committed adultery with stones and with stocks. And yet for all this, her treacherous sister Judea hath not turned unto me with her whole heart, but feignly, saith the Lord. And the Lord said unto me, the backsliding Israel has justified herself more than treacherous Judea. In other words, it based on the fact that Judea didn't learn its lesson by watching Israel. Actually, Israel isn't quite as bad as Judea is because they have a good example to realize that why their turn is going to be next. So I'm going to stop there for today, since we and tackle the other half of this parable tomorrow, which is basically, the sister Judea or Haloah Ba. I know I'm probably torturing that name, but bear with me. So let's end with a prayer. Oh, dear Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this time to look into your word. And that we can see the great examples that you set all through history of how to be in your good, how a nation can be honoring to you and how it can fall by the adulterous ways and idol worship that our predecessors did also. Now we can learn our lesson and learn to look at history and realize what we need to do to to be in your can't think of the right word, Lord. I think you know my heart, Lord. And so, and thank you so much for this day, and thank you so much for all you do. In Jesus' precious name, I pray. Amen. So I'll talk to you all again tomorrow. Have a great day.